Tina Packer's latest role, Mag, and the beauty queen of Linnaean is, as my father would say, a beaut. And she now is on stage with it at Shakespeare and Company in Lenox, Massachusetts. The play is set in the early 1990s in the kitchen of Mag's house in the village of Linnaean in the west of Ireland. She lives with and is taken care of by her unmarried 40-year-old daughter, Maureen, who longs to escape her cruel, manipulative mother. The pair's battles escalate when a new romantic prospect arises for Maureen. What is there not to love about this story? Packer gave up the day-to-day running of Shakespeare and Company 5 years ago, but remains its founding artistic director and has been busy as anything. It's a thrill to have her with us this morning. Tina Packer, thank you very much.
Oh, morning, Joe, and thank you.
I love having you here. Also joining us is another dear, dear friend, Elizabeth Aspenleader, who is the co-star of this production and really the person who talked Tina into it. So, good morning, Lizzie. How are you?
I'm doing great. Nice
and
to be here.
It's a great pleasure to welcome Matthew Penn to the program as well, co-artistic director of the Berkshire Playwrights Lab and a veteran TV director and directing this production and first time directing at Shakespeare and Company.
That's right. First time directing at Shakespeare and Company.
And it's a delight to have you here as well. Thank
it's
you very much.
Pleasure.
All right. Lizzie, let's begin with you because you really are sort of key to the story in the sense of you found this work and thought it would be perfect for Tina.
Herself.
I did. And the play, Joe, is steeped in rich language, very Shakespearean. And our artistic director, Tony Simotis, we talked about this play with Jonathan Croy as well, artistic associate, and they thought this would also be a good show for the company, pushing the envelope on dark comedy, which we've done in the past several years. And it's turned out to be, knock on wood, just a wonderful production. And having Matthew Penn guiding us has just been truly, truly extraordinary. And the two guys that are in the show with us, Dave Sedgwick and Edmund Donovan, and the whole team has been a wonderful, wonderful experience. Heart-wrenching, exhausting. I feel like I've been hit by a truck most days at the end of the show. But we've pulled it all together. And knock on wood, our audiences seem to be really connecting with it. And we run right through September 15th with this, so we're very, very excited to continue on.
A summer holdover. There's actually summer in this region, a theater in this region that you can see in late summer, early fall, which is very
absolutely,
nice.
Absolutely. And we still have, you know, we go through Labor Day with Love's Labor's Lost and Heroes, and we have Leap Year, which is a new world premiere running at Simon's Rock, which opens this weekend. We're doing some off-campus offerings, Kaufman's Barbershop up in Pittsfield, performing a show in a barbershop. So Tony's really broadened out Shakespeare and Company's reach this season. And as you know, we run year-round. Accomplice opens this fall with Stephen Rothman, who's also directing Leap Year. So we have a lot of offerings at Shakespeare and Company year-round, shakespeare.org. And of course, we're thrilled to have Tina back on the boards with us again, and Matthew Penn.
Now, is this correct that you, in addition to doing the wonderful actress and doing many productions at Shakespeare and Company, of course, head up marketing and public relations and all of that. But you and Tina have never worked together on stage before?
As actors.
True.
I've directed her a lot.
Yes.
I know. How did this happen that we've never worked together as actors? It's incredible. I love her so dearly. And every night I put the screws to her. It's a lot of torture and abuse, and but it's done in such a loving family way.
Oh, yes.
Well, you are Miss Passive-Aggressive in this, right? I mean, that's...
I am. It's actually very painful. I mean, she's psychically killing her daughter. She's controlling her every which way that she possibly can. And it's mostly from a rocking chair she's controlling her. So, but somehow Martin McDonagh manages to make it very, very funny, you know. It's kind of despairing and angry, and it's funny.
It's funny because so many of us can relate to that.
Yes.
That's which a little is scary.
It is. And they are laughing, Joe. It's so dark, so dark. And you have to laugh. Otherwise, you know, you'd be jumping off a bridge or, you know. becoming an alcoholic or something. It's just,
well,
yeah.
God knows that's
close to
not
home.
Not known to the acting or the Irish.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
When it comes to directing a production like this, Matthew, what is the challenge in bringing out that humor and not letting the dark overtones take over?
You know, it's really a question in a way of guiding the circumstance, sort of the true circumstance, and having four extraordinary actors, particularly these two. And what you find is that the sort of the truth of their story sort of takes over, and whether then it becomes dark or funny by turns and frequently within seconds, in a way is just part of the story that you're telling. So what was interesting about this for me was I never set out to sort of craft a scene as being funny or dark, because by turns McDonough is both, as I say, sometimes within a few seconds or one piece of dialogue. And in a way, it was really all about sort of being true to the circumstance, and the rest of it kind of would take care of itself. That was what interested me in saying yes to Lizzie in the first place about doing this play, which was that odd combination, that odd confluence of the absolute dark and the very funny, as I say, occurring simultaneously. You know,
and does it take a while to make that a reality, to explore that and to figure it out of what that line is?
Yeah. I mean, we'd have the 3 weeks of rehearsal. And what you see is sort of the life emerging. And then with your actors, and you start to sort of craft and fine tune it. But that 3 weeks of rehearsal is sort of about finding that world. And then as you find it, you start to see unexpectedly funny things or unexpectedly tragic things. But first you have to find these people in this circumstance. And you'd be surprised how many good things follow when you've done that.
Do you think there is a – you even use the term, and I read this a couple of times in reviews, but you even use the term in the advertising for the play of Irish humor, which I assume is the dark –
Do you know about this, Joe?
Well, maybe.
Donahue.
I come by this honestly, sure. But I'm curious as to how that would be defined.
Well, I don't know if I really ought to speak about this because I'm English. I'm part of the oppressor, so.
I think you're the perfect person to speak about
this. I do too.
I
was going to say, excuse me, Miss Packer.
Well, for all your Irish listeners, I apologize in advance. I do. I think it has been 400 years, probably more. Well, really, Cromwell, but even in Shakespeare's day, you know, how to suppress the Irish was a kind of ongoing both joke and ongoing problem. And what would happen is every time Elizabeth sent another of her emissaries out to tame the Irish, it would break them. They would all end up dying themselves because the job was so hard. And I think basically it has always been the idea that the English are going to suppress the Irish, and then the Irish are going to find hundreds of millions of ways around it. And it's actually created, first of all, this kind of we will survive at all odds humor. You know,
right.
It's also created an incredible use of language. So even though their language was taken away from them, they're forced to speak English. They would put, you know, they would mix English up so much they ended up as the great storytellers of the English language, and you know, you kind of see this survival that comes through with the Irish, with their wits and their ability to be able to say the truth in various. I'm going to say poetic, but also obfuscating ways. And it's been this kind of long, long, long history of struggle and pain and laughter, you know. And I think in the end, humor is what it is. And then we won't get into the Catholic Church and the role of the Catholic Church in Ireland.
I'm game, but I understand why.
Well, it comes up in the play, you know.
Yeah, sure.
There was a priest on the news Wednesday, had a babby with a Yank. And Father Hanlon likes, anyway.
That provides the, I mean, really the baseline.
Yes.
Much of where this is coming from.
Yeah.
And hey, if they can do it, why can't you?
Yeah,
as the mother, right?
Well, absolutely, and you know, my desire—I'm speaking as the character now. My desire to survive, my desire not to be put in a home, my desire to actually have a voice in life. You know, and I think she's just teetering on the edge of senility. So she's really so aware when she's being called senile. And it's more like, I'll show you whether I'm senile or not, you know, and then she plots more and more dangerous things.
But we feel for both of you in this, don't we? I mean, we feel certainly for for the mother who wants to have some freedom, and also for the daughter who wants that freedom as well.
We do. And I've had a lot of audience members come up to me in emails and calls and texts saying, you know, at first I really felt for Maureen because she's suffocating in there. She wants to escape, but then I hated her. And then the mother and I felt the same way. Oh, she's old. She needs to be taken care of. And Maureen's, you know, so horrible to her. But then you want to strangle the mother. I mean, the two of them, where Tina put it very eloquently, that the way we communicate is through this combative communication and how we live our lives. And sometimes when you're in an abusive situation, you can't get out of it. You just fuel the fire. You're constantly fueling the fire, and as Tina was just saying, there's a lot of humor within it, but there's a lot of hurt and just going at each other with the knives and turning the screw. And Matthew's been terrific about finding those subtle moments in the play. And it's a very realistic play. It's a very in your face, truthful, and I think audiences are connecting to it because of those reasons.
Yeah, McDonough never gives you sort of an easy morality. Mm-hmm. I mean, both characters are both dark and by turns loving. So there's no real clear sense of good person, bad person, like in life. And so we watch these characters go at each other with a kind of viciousness based in a kind of peculiar love, you know, but you have to have both of those going.
Mm-hmm. And there's a thriller edge of your seat quality to it.
Yes, there is, which we won't give away.
We won't give away. But yet that also, I would think for you as a director, you have to set up that construct. And it's something that guides it in many ways.
I was sitting in the audience last night taking notes, and I was next to a gentleman I don't really know.
Isn't that like going to your own funeral?
No. In this case, it was much better than that.
Okay. Thank God.
But there was a moment.
No, but I mean, just being there, knowing at any moment somebody could say something that could just ruin your day.
That has happened, although not on this production. I was actually trying to explain to the actors a note the other day, and I was saying, you have no idea what rifles through the audience at that moment. But when you're in there and you're surrounded by it, you suddenly have that sense of, wow, that's working 10 times better than I thought, or needs to be clearer, either one. But we got to this moment, which was fairly jarring, and suddenly I felt this man grab me on my forearm and squeeze, and I sort of looked at him and thought, you know, we don't know each other this well, you know? So release my forearm.
Right. But their audience, they're talking, Joe. They're all through, oh, no, she's going to do, oh, and they're cheering, they're hissing. It's unbelievable. I feel like it's very Shakespearean in that way. The audience is very involved.
What do you think it is about, I mean, my mother always used to just refer to this as just, you know, that's why you go to the theater, just to be put into the state. Mm-hmm. But we want to be put through that emotional ringer.
Yeah. Yeah, we
do. And pay to do it. Well, that's great.
But the thing is, Joe, when you think about your inner emotional life, you probably have to pay your wife and your psychiatrist to help you do it, you know.
Well, I don't have to pay my wife, thank God. But I do certainly the other, yes.
Because we no longer recognize the flow of emotion, if I can put it like that.
Yeah.
You know, and we're so distracted. And it's, you know, I'm not going to go down this road, but our culture is getting we're getting more and more fragmented. So actually knowing who we are on the inside is becoming more and more difficult. What happens to you when you go to the theater is that you actually do follow the emotional life of the characters. That's the point of theatre, is to get the audience back in touch with what goes on with them. And it's a powerful place. And you all know you're there. There's no screen. There's nothing stopping the audience and the actors from having a very direct experience. And as we all know now through modern neuroscience, that in fact the neurons that go off in my brain start firing the neurons that go off in your brain as well. So this interconnectedness.
There's a call and response.
There's a call and this deep interconnectedness, which is not something that you particularly get from social media.
What is it like? You know, you were just in the Toast of New York earlier this year in Women of Will.
Yay. Thank you.
And off Broadway, and I didn't read a bad word. I mean, it was, everything was just lovely and beautiful. I got to see the performance. You were amazing.
Thank you.
I mean, that's a tour de force.
Yeah, thank you. I had a smashing time. I really did. And I feel, you know, it was 40 years since I've been in New York, lived in New York. And suddenly I've got my little village apartment. And I'm trotting off to the theater every night and living a very singular life. Well, apart from my acting partner, Nigel Gore. So there's the two of us in the middle of the village, just living this kind of artist's life. And, you know, it was lovely. It was lovely. I felt like I'd reclaimed my life in a way.
Because again, I assume that is something you could have never done as the full-time artistic director.
Never. You're on 24/7 as an artistic director. You really do, and your concentration is there. And you don't actually want to be anywhere else because you want to get the thing right, you know. But what does happen to you, at least what happened to me after 35 years of doing that, was that I actually didn't know who I was anymore. And so it was like, what do I want? I can't think, well, who I, it was always, what do we want? What is it that's going to be best for this we? And this we had become this vast organization, you know.
Right.
And so suddenly being able to be by myself in New York, Lizzie came and stayed with me a couple of days, but by and large, by myself in New York, was really an introverted time for me, even though I was performing at night, and it was smashing, and I recommend it to anybody.
You know, I was sitting in the audience, I'm watching you, and I have a million questions going through my head, and one of them was, I wonder, because I'd seen you do it at Shakespeare and Company, were the audiences at all different?
They were. What happened in New York was, you know, we began rather simply and our audiences weren't so big. And then it started growing and it started growing. And what you could feel was people had seen one part, they'd seen three parts. There was a kind of conversation that was going on between the audience themselves, you know, about, well, you know, what does this mean? You know, what do we understand through that? What is the role of women in society? But not only that, what does this great artist say? And what happens if you do tell the truth and you die for telling the truth, you know? So these conversations began to happen between the audience members. And that to me was just fantastic. And I don't think we ever got to that pitch at Shakespeare and Company, but it became a pitch. So in the last performance of all, when Nigel and I go on at the beginning of the play, we go out just to talk to the audience. Where I'm actually asked, saying, will you get up and dance with us when we're doing Winter's Tale? We walked out there very casually. So it's not beginning of the play. The whole place erupted. It was extraordinary. They just erupted in acknowledgement of the journey itself. And, you know, people from all parts had come. It was so gratifying, I can't tell you, and inspiring.
The other thing that I thought of while I was sitting there is I just can't imagine another human being doing that role. Like, who else could do that?
I don't know. I hope a lot of women are going to do it. I mean, I'm going to send
it.
But
you have that history. You know, you have. Yeah, I mean, yeah, sure. Yeah, somebody else could do it. But I mean, I just can't imagine, because you brought so much to it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, it is the embodiment of how I think and feel, you know. So I'm very fortunate. But it's also because it's Will Shakespeare and he's trained me, if I can put it like that, living in his world and doing all of his plays for so many years. And not many women have done that. Oh, not many people have done that, you know.
I mean, you have the URL that he doesn't have.
Well,
Well said. Well
good.
Said.
And I like that.
The book is going to be out next year, right?
Knopf, yes.
Knopf is doing
That's great.
Yeah. So, and we're going to go on a national tour then at that point. We are going to The Hague this year, and we're going to Mexico this year, but it's next year we're going to go out on the road with it.
Well,
but
we're
have
so
her.
Proud.
We're so proud, and I it's such a pleasure and honor to be on stage in Beauty Queen of Lenan with Tina and Matt directing. And like I said, it's great, Joe, because we're running through into the fall and all of our other offerings. You know, so it's
you're pronouncing it Lenan.
We're Lenan. We spoke to the we went to the Irish Rep in New York,
yep.
And
that's a fine place.
It's fine. And Kieran O'Reilly worked with David Sedgwick and I and Matthew a little bit on our accents, and Tina. We all had accents. Accent work, but so that's how
mine's about
it.
Liverpool.
Somebody else asked, "How did you work on the accents?" And I said, "Well, Tina says she's a Liverpool Liverpoolian, and how that Lenan transferred." But it's the accents have been just such a pleasure. Mm. So you can get it yourself. So get your comp plan, and we have a lovely exchanges that we have a lot of fun with.
Yeah.
And for you, Matthew, is this the beginning of a beautiful friendship? Would you like to do more with the Shakespeare Company?
I hope so. You know, I've
we
had
hope
sort
so
of,
too. We hope so.
No, I've lived all or part time in the Berkshires for my life, really.
Right.
And
29 years.
And yes, 29 years. And the opportunity to balance the television work with theatrical work, which is where I started, and to do it, you know, down the road with such an extraordinary group of actors and writers. You know, like anything in life, it only happened almost by happenstance. And this has been an extraordinary experience. So I hope so again.
Yes.
The Beauty Queen of Lenan is at Shakespeare & Company in Lenox, Massachusetts through September 15th. You can find out more at shakespeare.org, shakespeare.org. Tina Packer, Matthew Penn, and Elizabeth Aspenleader, I thank you all so much for being here. It's a delight, and just to know you're doing this wonderful work is such
thank
a
you,
pleasure.
Joe.
Such a pleasure.
Thank
and Joe, just thank to you, tag Joe. In, Mother Courage and Her Children closes this weekend. We have Les Faux Pas running on the outdoor footprint, and we have Love's Labor's Lost running through Labor Day, and what else?
Ever the marketer.
I know. Shakespeare.org. Leaf Year opens this weekend at Simon's Rock in Great Barrington. Please come and see it all. Artistic Director Tony Simotas is done a great job this year, and so come and see us.
We love you all. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Appreciate
cheers.
It.
Thank you,
you're listening
thank
to the Roundtable on WAMC.